Hello and welcome to Guiding Assets, the flagship investment podcast for CFA Institute. I'm Mike Wahlberg, and we have another interview from CFA Institute's Risk and Asset Allocation Summit, where Paul Andrews interviewed Kai Wu, founder and chief investment officer of Sparkline Capital. Sparkline is an investment management firm that applies machine learning and computing to uncover alpha in large unstructured data sets. The two have a great conversation about building your own alternative data sets from unstructured data, applying natural language processing to your stock selection process, and the all-important question, is AI coming for your job? Paul oversees the strategic direction and leadership of the Research, Advocacy, and Standards function at CFA Institute. Enjoy the chat.
Well, Kai, welcome, and thanks for joining us today with our discussion around technology and how technology and data are influencing investment decisions and helping to make better choices in the marketplace. And let me start, if I could, by just asking you a little bit about your firm and Sparkline Capital and what it is, what it does, and just a little bit about how you use data and analytics and technology in this great big world of finance.
Well, thank you. So we are Sparkline Capital. We are a systematic value investment shop. Our whole thing, our whole ethos is, how do we take value investing, this kind of age-old framework, into the modern era? It's no secret that the performance of kind of traditional, say, price-to-book type value strategies has been, so-so the past decade or so. And for me, the big question has been, commentators often ask, is value investing dead? Right. So what I say is, no, of course not. Like, these principles are, by definition, true. You want to buy cheap assets, of course. Mm-hmm. But the question is, what is intrinsic value and how do you measure that? Right. Does book value matter in the modern day? And I think what's helpful is to kind of go back through time to the days of Ben Graham in Security Analysis when he wrote the Bible of value investing. Yeah. And companies were industrial. There were railroads and steel mills. And you take a look at the market today. The biggest stocks, your Apple, your Google, and your Microsoft, they don't use tangible capital to create earnings. Instead, they use intangible assets. At Sparkline, we focus on four pillars of intangibles: brand equity, human capital, intellectual property, and network effects. And these intangible assets are really what drive earnings today, and are kind of becoming more and more important as a part of the economy. When we've done research on this, we found that what used to be a rounding error is now 50%. The majority of assets today is now intangible. And by the way, in many of the most important sectors, it's 80 to 90%, right? So if you take the 11 sectors in the market and classify them as either intangible or tangible, so an example of a tangible industry would be banking or finance. An intangible might be IT or communications, media. It turns out that 80% of the market cap of S&P stocks is in the intangible category, right? So we really are forced, right, as investors, to acknowledge the change in the economy we've seen in the past century and attempt to quantify what is the value of companies with respect to their intangible assets. Now, how do we use data, right? So this is a really important question. One thing you could do is you could say, let's look at the accounting statement. And let's look at the R&D expenditure. Let's look at the SG&A. And they'll serve as okay proxies. But it's still going to be quite limited, right? You have to make a ton of assumptions regarding how to capitalize and depreciate these assets. Also, the relationship between input and output is very nonlinear for intangible assets. A good example is marketing, right? If I, some kind of guerrilla marketer, I can put together a scrappy YouTube video and it could get a billion hits. Or I could, put together a really high production value ad, buy a Super Bowl spot, and it could put flop. Right, same with R&D, right? My next R&D project could be worth $10 billion or nothing. So because of that kind of relationship, we're really forced to kind of put aside the kind of historic cost nature of accounting and instead move to this kind of Wild West world of what's called alternative data. Mm-hmm. We tend to look at information such as in patents as a way of kind of gauging the quality of IP. We'll look at LinkedIn job postings for human capital. We'll look at social media. We'll look at, Glassdoor is a good example for kind of the culture, the strength of company cultures, which are all important intangible assets. So these are all highly relevant. The challenge with these data sets is that they're unstructured. And that just means that they tend to take the form of audio or text or video and not so much be, something you could kind of throw into an Excel spreadsheet or an SQL database. These are data that you know, this traditional statistical toolkit, you know, linear regressions or econometrics, just are not really able to deal with. And therefore, we're forced to, again, you know, be a bit more open-minded with regards to the tools that we're using to kind of bring this data into the fold. And these tools are, you know, we're very fortunate to live in a time when we've seen such rapid progress with regards to AI, right? So ChatGPT, which everyone knows, is an example of a large language model. These natural language processing models are specifically designed to take text, take a patent abstract, or a Glassdoor review, and or an earnings call transcript, and bring it into a format such that it can become a structured input into a traditional quantitative process. So what is Sparkling, was your question. We're, you know, kind of old school value investors, but trying to apply it into a very new set of opportunities, you know, technology companies, consumer brands, et cetera, trying to find intangible value where we can, you know, and it's very core for us, because the only way we can really do what we're saying we're trying to accomplish is through the use of alternative data and also natural language processing AI.
Well, let's talk in a second about natural language processing, but let me ask you first about the vast quantities of data that you're talking about. I mean, let's call it the traditional data, as you mentioned, and then there's all of this other data, yeah, particularly around some of the alternatives with Glassdoor and different social media hits, posts, and things of that nature. How do you sift through all of that? I mean, because to me, the way I look at it is there's a lot of noise out there with this data, and how do you make sense of it so that you actually can incorporate it into the model going forward?
Yeah, so I'd say there's two big pitfalls with learning the data. So first of all, the pros. You're kind of forced to do it. Like, you kind of cannot afford to not use alternative data in the modern day, right? Do we really expect that if we continue to mine the same exact, say, CompuSat CRISP data set over and over again, we're going to get a different result? Right? That's like your kind of Einstein definition of insanity. You know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. So we kind of have to, you know, take advantage of the new tools and information available. Now, what are the two pitfalls? Okay, there's two pitfalls. So first is exactly what you said. Signal-to-noise ratio is pretty low. I mean, it's not that as high to begin with in traditional data, but it's just low in general in financial markets. Prices tend to be extremely volatile relative to fundamentals, and there's a lot of information in these data sets that may be not even applicable to finance. So our solution is to kind of use intuition to narrow down the search space. And what that means is we'll start off with a hypothesis, intangible assets matter. Then go to the next layer. All right, well, like, you know, human capital is an important dimension of intangible assets. Okay, LinkedIn profiles might be an interesting place to look to find the, you know, quality of a company's personnel. Okay, so that seems all very logical. And once we kind of narrowed down to that one data set, the chances of overfitting are much lower because we've already done a lot of the work using kind of our, you know, human, you know, insight with regards to financial markets. So the other pitfall in alternative data, which is kind of unique, is that companies and CEOs are highly incentivized to manipulate the narrative in their favor. So I wrote a paper on this about measuring culture, and I kind of like started off by making fun of how like CEOs love talking about just how amazing their culture is. We're so innovative, we're so collegial, blah, blah, blah. You know, the Enron CEO said that, right? And so what you need to do is instead kind of bypass communications directly from the mouthpiece of the company and instead kind of go to the ground truth. And in this case, we use Glassdoor reviews and we kind of scrape all this information. And, you know, these are the text reviews of thousands of people who are either employed or formerly employed at these companies, yeah, and then use the natural language processing on this. And that gives us a kind of more unbiased signal with regards to, you know, the culture of a company.
Yeah. So do you think that, I mean, we'll ever get away totally from the human element? I mean, you said you start with intuition, looking at the alternative data. Is it that we'll always have that human? It's going to be AI plus HI, human intelligence, yeah, plus artificial intelligence, do you think?
I it's hard to predict, you know, what the world's going to be in 100 years. I can say during the course of my career, I do not expect it to be the case that, you know, the human kind of portfolio manager role will be replaced by an AI. AI today is really good at certain things. It's really good at, you know, helping you to code, at retrieving information, summarizing, you know, transcripts and information. That's all kind of the lower level work that, you know, frankly, quite frankly, as a investor, I love the fact that it can do that, right? I welcome that. I'm not worried for my job. This is great. I can now, you know, be twice as productive because a lot of the kind of menial things I spend a lot of time doing, like Googling stuff, you know, is now taken care of by this AI. Mm-hmm. So I think for, at least for the near future, this is going to be kind of highly augmenting and potentially a democratizing force when it comes to allowing individual researchers to accomplish a lot more with smaller teams.
And do you think that individual investors will be able to take advantage of this, let's call it the brave new world, in the coming days or even now?
Perhaps. Absolutely. I mean, there is a time like, you know, when as an individual investor, you had such limited access to data. Right, and you're just, the cards were stacked so far against you compared to, say, some hedge fund manager or a quant who was like hand entering information, you know, into a computer, which, by the way, at the time was so expensive. Nowadays, you go on Google, you can get, you know, any kind of stock price, Yahoo Finance, and more frequently, information that used to be very difficult to parse. Go back to the earnings call transcript information can now be summarized, you know, for very cheap by AIs, and now can be, you know, accessible to individual investors. So again, I do think of this as a kind of a leveling force, not just across, you know, different large firms versus small firms, but even, you know, down to the level of the individual investor. Mm,
that's very, very interesting. You know, a minute ago you mentioned natural language processing.
Yeah.
And maybe could you elaborate a little bit more on that, particularly how Sparkline is using this new technology?
Right.
Well, it's not that new. I shouldn't say that it's evolving. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So. You know, look, so what is natural language processing? It, you know, I think everyone knows what ChatGPT is. So I think we can start with that as like a, you know, analogy. So we start with ChatGPT. What is it doing? It's creating a conversational chatbot-like interface for a human to kind of play with. But what is ChatGPT built on is this underlying foundational model, this large language model called GPT-3 or GPT-4.
Right.
What is that trying to do? All it's trying to do is basically a completion model. Where, like, you know, you give it two words, it predicts the next word. Or you give it two words, it predicts the word in between. Right? That's how these things are trained. But they're just trained on so much data, right? All the websites, all the books, all of the, you know, Wikipedia articles in English, that it develops a very, very uncanny, right, intelligence when it comes to understanding human language, in this case, English. And these models are kind of the base for everything you can do, right? My analogy, which we talked about, was the idea of like a power tool with varying drill bits you could use, right? One drill bit being ChatGPT, allowing it to interface with humans, but other ones being like using it to predict sentiment from like, you know, hey, this is a positive article, this is a negative article. Topic modeling, the idea of saying, hey, this article is about, you know, earnings, this one's about like fraud. And so there's plenty of different things you can build on this edifice. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we use it is, you know, we're a quant firm, so we're not, you know, trying to have the model like read something and then, you know, I talk to it for a while and, you know, buy a stock. You know, we have it kind of directly feed into the next layer of our process. So traditional value investment process. We want to buy cheap assets. We look at all the stocks and we say which things are cheap or expensive against some measure of intrinsic value. That intrinsic value measure includes book value alongside the four pillars, human capital, brand, intellectual property, network effects. In order to kind of form these metrics, though, we are kind of going to go into, say, all the patents and then run them through the NLP models to kind of spit out you know, different scores as to how cutting edge they are and then tally them up at the company level to kind of form a relative ranking with regards to IP strength. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we will train these models, right, all over the patents on, you know, certain, like, understandings of, like, what is considered cutting edge versus not.
Is the work that you're doing at Sparkline also translatable to risk management practices, for example? And where I'm going with this is, I mean, in the last few days, couple of months, few weeks, you know, we've seen these bank failures happening in the United States. And could artificial intelligence and machine learning have maybe predicted those, or at least given warning signals, perhaps, that these banks were in trouble?
Yeah.
And are you doing any work on the risk management side?
So it's funny. So one of my friends literally sent me a paper on this exact topic last week. And what the paper did was it looked at tweets. And it found that companies, you could use the tweets about these companies to kind of create bank risk, bank run scores from like top to bottom for all these companies. Mm-hmm. So again, it's not predicting whether or not the system will fail, but just saying to the extent that bank risk like continues to you know, spiral, these are the companies that are at most risk. Right. So this is kind of a bank risk factor. You know, we talked about like the Reddit Wall Street Bet factor, which is a similar concept where we use NLP to go through the Reddit posts of Wall Street Bets, figure out, you know, GameStop, Bed Bath & Beyond, certain companies. Mm-hmm. Not saying that they're going to outperform or not, just saying that in the event that, you know, that there's a higher risk that they end up kind of with these big price spikes because the Reddit army gets behind them. And so again, this is, you know, less saying we can predict that the that this crisis will continue, just saying that if it does continue, these are the names that are at most risk of kind of a negative adverse impact.
Yeah. So let me ask you, I mean, maybe just one final question if we can, which is around governance of all this data, because you're using it, like you just described, how it can be used perhaps for risk management, how it's helping you analyze existing data. How do you sort of keep track, govern, make sure that things don't go off the rails within Sparkline and clearly within the investments that you're making?
Yeah, so I think the first most important thing is that we're not just training black box models. We're not doing the thing that, you know, people assume quants do, where they just take a bunch of data and feed it into a large model and then say, all right, now we're going to train this on future stock returns, right? Because in that state of the world, it would be very difficult to kind of audit. Oh, so you want to buy Apple, but why? Right? Is it because of X, Y, or Z? You have no idea. You will never know. So we don't do that. Mm-hmm. Instead, as I mentioned, we start with intuition. We say, we think intangible assets tend to be misvalued. We think that these are the four pillars that matter. We think that this data set may potentially contain insight, blah, blah, blah. And so, like, we can actually trace all the way back to the end signal, like, which things are causing us to make what decision. So in a sense, like the actual portfolio construction process is very standard, very simple. Like nothing, there's no secret sauce there. It's very basic and transparent. It's just that the inputs, we're using kind of pretty cutting edge technologies to take this unstructured data, which, you know, most people, you know, aren't really able to kind of wrangle and create factors, dozens of different factors to kind of to build up into these composites.
So it sounds just maybe final comment. You can tell me whether I'm right or wrong, but you know, going forward, it just sounds like the conglomeration of all this data for our profession is just going to be table stakes. This is the way it's just going to have to be.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. You look at what the data vendors like Bloomberg is doing. Like, it's not just, the terminal is not just price volume. They have, you know, news, they have transcripts, and they're investing very heavily in bringing this alternative data into the terminal. I think that's a great bellwether for where the industry is headed. So much of information is unstructured. I think 80% of information is unstructured. So for us to say we're going to ignore that and just focus on price volume, you know, and 10Ks, you know, is kind of missing the boat here. So I think it's tremendously important for investors to pay attention to this information.
Well, Kai, thank you. You've been very generous with your time and really learned a lot just in our few minutes together, and appreciate it very much.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Very, very welcome.
You've been listening to Paul Andrews in conversation with Kai Wu, Founder and Chief Investment Officer of Sparkline Capital. I'm Mike Wahlberg, and this has been Guiding Assets.